From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Today on the show, why the organizers of a planned Women's Entrepreneurship Day last year decided pretty quickly they needed a whole week's worth of programming.
To see all of these female entrepreneurs, these women entrepreneurs coming together, I think we don't realize how many big players are making moves in the community right now.
Yeah, and our women.
Later, the Beloit International Film Festival builds an outsized reputation for a modest-sized city.
Over the last 13 years, the film festival has grown from this boutique, small-town film festival into this internationally recognized and renowned program.
And another film program that has grown through its history. We'll preview the 90th edition of the Academy Awards, the Oscars, this weekend.
Plus, the latest edition of Bubbler Talk. Lake Effect is next. News is first.
This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. About a year and a half ago, leaders at a Milwaukee co-working space called Ward 4 were planning an event called Women's Entrepreneurship Day. They believed it was important to connect women just starting out in an often solitary environment with mentors and others who've learned important lessons in their careers. Quickly, they figured out they were onto something as the day grew into a full week's worth of events.
Next week, the second annual Women's Entrepreneurship Week will feature an even heavier schedule. Community curator is Kenzie Enright's title at Ward 4. She and Excelity Marketing's Jenny Whedon are both heavily involved in the week and join us in the studio this morning. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So originally this was supposed to be Entrepreneurship Day when it was dreamed up like a year and a half ago. Did it surprise you that the demand for what you do was so great that it grew to Entrepreneurship Week and got even bigger in the second year?
Yeah, and I think the awareness that there are so many women entrepreneurs was surprising as well.
Yeah.
And that was really what called us to create this entire week of events, because we truly can't fit all of the women entrepreneurs in one day. I mean, we can't even in 1 week, but we're doing our best job, you know?
Well, and Jenny, why does this set of events resonate so strongly with you?
Well, I work for a woman entrepreneur. I work for Jackie Steinmetz at Excelity Marketing. And, I mean, she's been just a really influential person in my career and just within the community. And
yeah, talk about your own journey
yeah.
in this way. What kind of challenges did you face and how has working for, say, a woman-owned company made the difference for you?
Well, I mean, I started out in sales and then moved to marketing at a mid-sized business. And I had worked at a Fortune 100 business as well and really just didn't find that I was making a lot of moves in my career, that I wasn't really progressing. So I had been connected with Jackie through a friend of mine who was a colleague, and it really just kind of opened my eyes up to not only working for a startup and working for a woman entrepreneur, but just the startup scene in general in Milwaukee is so amazing. And to see all
of these... Yeah, that it exists is the crazy thing, right?
And to see all of these female entrepreneurs, these women entrepreneurs coming together, I think we don't realize how many big players are making moves in the community right now.
Yeah, and our women.
Yeah.
We do not call enough attention to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
true.
Is there something to be said for the fact that it is so strong, and yet, you know, the size of the community is still small enough that you know, you can make these one-to-one kinds of connections?
Yeah. And the purpose of some of the events are to, you know, inspire change in female entrepreneurs' careers, kind of find that motivation as well. Because I know when I came into the startup industry, just the business industry in general, it's a very male-dominated space. I'm often the only woman in the conference room that I'm sitting in. But when I see another woman walk in, that's – rather than feel like that competitiveness that you have to feel, it's like
encouraging.
Support. Yeah. It's like empowering to one another. And I think the women that we've been planning this event with have really – that's really struck them. And it's just really a lot of supporting one another and growing a strong community.
I mean, we even have an event during the week that is about building a wolf pack, I think it's called.
Yeah. So it's like holding a woman accountability group.
Why is that such a key part of the equation?
Yeah. So we had an event planning meeting. So that was a few weeks ago, and it actually brought in about 40 women. The women were talking about what they wanted to see in terms of events, what they wanted to do. I kind of opened it up to just say, like, what would you like to see? And someone raised her hand and she said, what can we do to make this go on after the event is finished? You know, how can we continue this community? How can we continue building one another up, highlighting one another's success, supporting one another? And then this woman raised her hand and said, I know how. I'm in a wolf pack. And we were all kind of laughing. And she was like, no, I'm in a wolf pack. We all just really support each other. It's an accountability group. So I would love to host a workshop where we teach other women to help hold each other accountable and help inspire one another. So that's going to be one of the biggest workshops that we have during the week.
You know, you say you were fortunate enough to work for a woman entrepreneur, but is there something that the entrepreneurs and the would-be entrepreneurs who go through this week can bring to work in environments where they might still be working in a male-dominated field?
Absolutely. I think we're having an emerging talent panel, which is going to be really good for that cause specifically. Jenny's actually one of the panelists. I think anyone hearing her story of just entering the startup world in general would be inspiring and give them tools that would equip them to be successful in their community.
Can you, again, going back to your experience, how are things different in terms of, you know, what you're able to accomplish and essentially how the workplace works for you in working in your current environment versus your experience in as you say, a Fortune 100 company?
I think that working at a startup and working for a woman entrepreneur, but especially, I mean, just even working at a startup in Milwaukee versus working at a larger business gives you so many more opportunities for growth. I have learned more in the last 2.5 years than I probably learned in my entire life in regards to just business and being a professional and really just growing with the business. And you do get to really own that business, even though you're not a partner or an owner, you have a really large hand in what happens at startups.
Yeah, and I think you can see a direct impact of your work on the company and
for
how
sure.
it does, which is so powerful.
When we hire new employees, I tell them that they are owners in the company, that they have a direct impact in everything that happens. So versus working at a larger company where I'd bring ideas and they wouldn't get past a manager. Mm-hmm. You know, I was trying, but it was a cute effort. But, you know, you can just see the impact way more, for sure.
Where do things like, I know this was part of the menu last year, also things like headshots and self-defense workshops come in when it comes to entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so those are two very separate things. The headshots, we thought going through women that are going through like a hiring process or looking to start their own companies, a lot of them don't have professional headshots. So it's really just like it's the tiniest thing, but it's a huge perk to a woman that either wants to update their headshot or like update their LinkedIn, kind of have like a more professional look. So we just that's like one of the tools that you can use to equip themselves better. But the self-defense workshop, that's funny that you bring that up because it's one of my favorite things that we're doing. It's a women-owned company. So she started a self-protection agency for women, and she goes to a lot of businesses, but I think it's just instilling that confidence in yourself and kind of they were like, you're going to feel great. You're
going
to feel a lot more comfortable.
Definitely going.
Yeah, it's going
to
be
sure
great. It's
gonna going
be,
to be. That one.
And then if you think about the atmosphere in general, like whether or not you learn something so important, but you're with a bunch of women that are there to, you know, like learn something and equip themselves, and it's going to be a really cool atmosphere, I think.
What career stage are you expecting most of the people who take part in this to be in?
It's, I think, going to be a lot of everywhere.
Yeah. If it'll vary for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Because we have those startups and we have freelancers and, you know, those digital nomads. But we also have, I mean, with our sponsor, with Northwestern Mutual being involved, they're going to draw in a crowd of more professional, you know, corporate professionals.
Right.
I think.
So there is something in it, even if you aren't working in kind of a small startup space.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think it's not just, I mean, it's Women's Entrepreneurship Week, but that doesn't mean that you have to be
a woman.
Even a woman.
Yeah.
You could be supporting women entrepreneurs. You could be working for one or
I wonder if thinking
one.
About entrepreneurship even within the context of a big company like Northwestern Mutual or another big company, you know, maybe entrepreneur doesn't mean starting your own business. Maybe entrepreneur means starting your own idea within that bigger business.
Yeah. And that's the way that we're kind of looking at it is we were actually for the emerging talent panel, Jenny was saying like, I don't know if I'm necessarily an entrepreneur. I don't know if I should be on that. But I think we're taking the word entrepreneur and just looking at the innovation within it and the innovation that someone brings personally to that. So it's more of a blanket statement than it is specifically to a certain field, a certain industry. And we'd like to make that as inclusive as we possibly can. My biggest takeaway, and I know Jenny feels the same, is the overwhelming amount of help that we're receiving from other women and enthusiasm about that help and wanting to, you know, volunteer, wanting to like help set up the name tags, do those little things.
I think that just speaks to the need of this event.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, Kenzie Enright and Jenny Whedon, thank you both so much for your time. Best of luck this coming week.
Thank you so much. Hope to see you at some of the events.
Yeah.
Kenzie Enright is community curator at Ward 4, which is organizing next week's Women's Entrepreneurship Week events. Jenny Whedon is also playing a role. She's marketing manager at Excelity Marketing. You'll find a link to more information at WUWM.com.
A quick break now, and then we'll shift to the movies. Later in the show, two of our movie contributors share an Oscars preview. But first, the Beloit International Film Festival, BIFF to you acronym fans, is headed into its final days. We'll get some perspective on where it's been and where it's going when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR.
Lake Effect continues on WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. You might not expect the city of Beloit to have a reputation among members of the international film community, but slowly a group of people has been working towards the goal of, quote, bringing the world to Beloit and Beloit to the world.
That is the aim of the Beloit International Film Festival, which has been bringing international filmmakers from over 27 nations and their work to the greater Beloit community for more than 13 years.
The festival's executive director and Beloit native Max Makin recently joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio to talk about why Beloit and why he believes film is one of the best ways to impact and bring communities together.
A few years ago, a marketing tag for the Beloit International Film Festival was, Beloit, why not? Over the last 13 years, the film festival has grown from this boutique small town film festival into this internationally recognized and renowned program. We have filmmakers from all over the world attend BIFF today. One interesting thing is our heat map on Google Analytics. Outside of some sub-Saharan African countries in Mongolia and Greenland, the world lights up. So our footprint truly is global. But it's also the magic of BIFF is the Beloit community. We are able to touch the entire spectrum of Beloit society in some ways of involvement, from sponsorship to volunteers to ticket buyers. Everybody in the community participates in some way or fashion. So it's something that brings together everybody and allows them a seat at the table, and film is the catalyst for the conversation.
There's a quote in a documentary we'll be discussing in a little bit from Sherman Park Rising, and it says, stories are important because they teach us something. You know, how important is it, do you think, for the BIFF to have a role in teaching the community something?
Yeah, I think that's part of our obligation to the community. There's a proverb that says, if your outlook is for 1 year, plant rice, for 10 years, plant trees, for a lifetime, teach the children. And I think that's something that I want to take and emphasize because it's the next generation of storytellers that we ought to be cultivating. And that's what's going to give us the content that means something to our audiences down the line. So implementing educational programs today to be able to keep the conversation moving in the future is vital to our organization.
Right. So let's get into your personal experience with BIFF and what direction you want to take it. You're a Beloit resident yourself.
Correct.
So you have a unique standpoint of knowing what the community has been, and I imagine a vision of where you want to take it in this role.
Yeah, I'm a native of Beloit, and I grew up in Beloit, so I've seen it through thick and thin. We're currently experiencing a wonderful renaissance in economic development, and it's truly one of the best times in Beloit's history to be there. And BIF is just part of that story. It's part of this renaissance, and even though that probably wasn't part of the formula of the city planners 13, 15, 20 years ago, well, it's almost impossible to talk about Beloit without talking about the film festival. So emphasizing education, I think, is critical. And we're expanding our outreach programs there. And that's part of, again, how I see us staying relevant in the future. But also just maintaining the course with where we are with our current content and our current way of looking at the film community. We emphasize our hospitality for filmmakers, and that, I think, has helped spread the word of BIF throughout the world. We invite them. We treat them to the local brews and the local foods, and they seem to just love it. It is Midwest hospitality at its best, and that's just, again, that's the community really coming out and being a part of it and having them put their own personal touch to the festival.
Now, with you and your personal touch, you're only the second executive director in its history. So with the challenges you're facing and now that you are at the helm, so to speak, what new path do you want to forge? You know, are there challenges in what you see and where you want to take it? Or is this a relatively welcoming and open community to a new direction that you want to be able to take it? Because that's a pretty long tenure to be the only second executive director in.
Sure. I think with any arts organization, especially in a small city, to just maintain the momentum moving forward and to grow with the limited resources we have available, it is a challenge. And so I think it's part of my obligation and my position to explain further the economic impact, the community impact, the relevancy of the film festival to the community, and how we can continue to maintain that image, not only for Beloit, but also for ourselves, because this is something that people in the community look forward to each year. This is in the middle of winter, and when most people are holed up at home, but this gives people an opportunity to get out and enjoy Beloit and get out and enjoy the downtown businesses and be a part of the community and social fabric.
Film festivals often bring and highlight local work that's being done, either with location shots, producers, actors, things of the sort. One in particular that you have screening at the festival is Sherman Park Rising. And most people outside of Wisconsin would be familiar with Sherman Park in the uproar it caused in the news that seemed like, the whole city was burning. That's what I heard from people out of state. Mm-hmm. But this puts a great perspective on Sherman Park and the people there. What is this film about here?
Well, it's about a mural that is painted on the corner of 47th and Center, and how the mural and the process of creating that mural brings the community together. And it's an amazing story that nearly every line in that dialogue is a gem in itself. It's just very introspective, and each line of dialogue is just part of the process of exploring the meaning behind the mural, what it means to cooperate as a community, and just to come together in this unique fashion that breathes life into this otherwise, well, like you mentioned, an area that has a different reputation.
Another film, you also, with film festivals, it's a range of shorts, documentary, full features. Tater Tot and Patton, that also, I think, is one that people in the Midwest can connect to, even if it takes place in South Dakota.
Yeah, you will connect very easily with the characters, being a Midwest audience. It's shot in South Dakota, and it's just a very witty and creative play amongst two characters that are at odds with each other. One is a young woman, the niece of the male lead actor, who has to come live on her uncle's farm in the middle of nowhere, South Dakota, from L.A., and how she reconciles the differences in lifestyle. Where's the Wi-Fi? What do you mean? What do you mean there's no signal here? And the uncle is an alcoholic and has obviously been set in his ways of life over the course of many years, and is hardened and calloused by a few things that have happened in his life.
She said, "Craig."
Yeah, she got the cancer. Come on.
Well, where is she?
She's in Rochester.
You mean she's not here?
No, she's not here.
Well, is she coming back?
Yeah, she's coming back.
Why are you here?
The place don't run itself. Come on. Come on.
So it's just you and me?
Until she gets back from the hospital.
It's the story about how his niece comes in, and at first it's very abrasive and hard to reconcile the difference, but she eventually softens him, and she eventually also comes around seemingly enjoy the slower pace of life.
On the note of slower pace of life, what film festivals can do is expose audiences to many things they wouldn't normally sit down to, whether it be at home on a streaming service or especially in the theater when the key to a box office success is elements of grandeur, special effects, you know, the bigger the better. With a film like Tater Tot and Patton that's slow moving, has a great appreciation for the setting, for where people are, it doesn't have things to distract you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you think is the importance of exposing people to films like this?
Well, I think it showcases the importance of good writing, good script writing in film. Because when we overtly rely on the visuals, then sometimes the writing takes a hit. And so this specific film, Tater Tot and Patton, is just brilliantly written. It's witty. It's creative. And that's something that is just, to me, refreshing to see outside of the normal mainstream content that we see on the big screen.
What kind of films grab your attention, and what are you looking for to showcase, you know, in next year's festival?
Well, Beloit is diverse. It's unique. We have many different walks of life, so we try to curate content that is a little bit for everyone. And being an international film festival and having that international footprint, we do get a very eclectic collection of films submitted, which allows us to be very flexible in what we're able to program. I wouldn't say there's an overarching theme to the festival, but there are certainly lots of pieces that are of interest to many different audiences across the spectrum. So it's just a part of, I think, the conversation that we try to push. It's across the board. It's not just focusing on one single issue. But I would say, too, that we do try to focus on what will speak to the local audiences. We have what's called the Wisconsin-Illinois Showdown, where we pit Wisconsin films versus Illinois films. And it's really cool to see the quality of the content that comes out of our own backyard. But those are normally the stories that also sell the best, too, at the box office, just because they are films or subjects of local interest.
Well, with this international draw for filmmakers and over 27 nations represented, I'm sure any given audience member will find something of interest for them.
Absolutely.
Oh, and Max Macon, I'd like to thank you for coming in today.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Max Macon is executive director of the Beloit International Film Festival, which runs through this Sunday. He spoke with Audrey Nowakowski. You can find out more about the festival and their films at WUWM.com.
We will preview some other films, the upcoming Academy Awards, with a couple of our regular film contributors when Lake Effect returns in a moment on WUWM.
Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. This weekend marks the 90th Academy Awards, the Oscars, or what Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski and Milwaukee film critics Ryan Jay and Dave Lurson might call the Super Bowl of Film. Come Sunday evening, the Motion Picture Academy will announce their verdicts for Best Film, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, and others from 2017. Among the top films up for awards are The Shape of Water, Dunkirk, Get Out, and Lady Bird, a testament to just how broad the genres and film topics are this year.
Jay and Lurson both say they don't envy the task of voters this year, but they were more than willing to join Audrey in the studio to discuss the past year's film trends, their Oscar predictions, and whether they think the film industry will adapt to address issues like diversity and the Me Too movement.
But Lurson started by explaining what he thinks makes a film Oscar-worthy.
I would say that it has to be of high technical quality, for one thing. The craft of it has to be at the highest level. If I were a member of the Academy, I would want the movie to say something significant, whether in the form of comedy or drama. And as we all know, the Academy has been kind of allergic to comedy over the course of its 90-year history. But whether humorously or seriously, the movie should address something important going on in our society and the lives of people, should do it intelligently. It's nice if the movie puts an entirely new or unusual perspective on the world we live in. So these would be the things I would look for.
I think an Oscar-worthy film is something that comes along at some point in the year, and it strikes you as something that just has the best production quality and also the most emotional hook. So when you see something that is edited perfectly, that doesn't lag at all, doesn't feel too long, it's timed right, it has some hyper qualities in terms of design across all aspects, whether it's costumes and set design and makeup, hairstyling, and then also great performances and perfect writing, and then just touches you on a different level, that sort of is where the Oscar sort of comes in.
What trends did you notice in film for 2017?
Well, I'm very gratified by two things, women and science fiction, in the form of The Shape of Water, which received the largest number of nominations this year. Science fiction, you know, not unlike comedy, has been something that the Academy has tended to overlook historically. I think that we've seen for several decades now, a lifetime for many people, the rise of science fiction and fantasy is one of the most important arenas of popular culture. And the Oscar awards have been very slow to recognize that. I think that the success of The Shape of Water, even if it wins nothing, but I'm sure it will win something, is an indicator. Also, The Shape of Water stars a woman as a protagonist. And this was not always, and Sigourney Weaver in Alien, but I mean, it has not always been the case in science fiction. Women are, of course, the major theme of the year culturally, politically. Women are fighting back from, you know, many, many lifetimes of bad practices, bad behavior, being overlooked, being abused in one way or another. And I think that the award ceremony will in some way reflect this. And I think that many of the nominations that we see are reflecting this also.
It's interesting that, you know, Dave, you mentioned the sci-fi and fantasy. I mean, I don't know that we saw that necessarily as a trend in film because we always get a sprinkling of them. But it is certainly, when it comes to like the Oscars, it is the most nominated film, The Shape of Water. And I think the last time we saw a film celebrated in that genre was Lord of the Rings, really, when it won.
Right.
You know, none of the Harry Potter films got nominated, and they could have been and should have been.
Star Wars usually just gets sound mixing or score or, you know.
Right. Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, when we talked previously about what makes an Oscar quality film, I think the Academy does tend to look more at drama. You know, they don't look at comedy, they don't look at sci-fi fantasy. Sometimes they'll look at musical, but then this year we're seeing one of the greatest musical films ever made, The Greatest Showman, being completely snubbed outside of its nomination in the Best Song category, which I hope it wins. The greatest thing about The Greatest Showman is it has gone on to become the fourth highest grossing movie musical of all time, only behind the live-action Beauty and the Beast, Grease, and Chicago. So, you know, there's really no rhyme or reason behind what comes, but we do certainly see the trend of, like, dramas getting more love.
Well, and on the note of, you know, dramas getting, I mean, this was a drama, dark comedy in a way, but the bit, there's a big significance behind Get Out's nomination for Best Film and Best Director. Do you guys want to touch upon that?
And Best Actor.
And Best Actor, yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, on the heels of hashtag Black Lives Matter or Oscars So White, and then going into the hashtag Me Too movement, you know, we're seeing the blurring and the mixing of politics and Hollywood and seeing it mix quite successfully because we're all talking about it. It's all relevant and it is hopefully moving our world in a better direction where we all need to go. And if it starts in entertainment and it starts with celebrity and people are using their platforms for a cause, why not? What I love so much about Get Out, and again, we're seeing the because that's a horror film. It's also a dark comedy. The last time we saw films like that get some Oscar attention was Misery or Silence of the Lambs, you know. But again, horror is a very, very rare genre. Mm-hmm. But just like we're seeing with The Shape of Water and women, that being led by a female character, Get Out sort of bridged the gap this year, much like Black Panther did recently, between black and white audiences and showing that we can talk about important or difficult topics in a sensitive way and that entertainment can spark those conversations.
Yes, and of course, Get Out builds on the success last year of Moonlight. So the rising acknowledgement of African Americans at the Oscars has been happening gradually during the past few years. I think we're seeing an acceleration of that. I don't think Get Out's going to win Best Picture.
It would be a coup if it did.
Yes, it would be.
I think it will win Best Original Screenplay. Mm-hmm. And that is great for Jordan Peele because he directed it. And on top of it being, you know, bridging all those genres and bridging the divide between black and white audiences, it is a very smart movie. And that comes back to the screenplay.
Absolutely. And part of that nomination for Get Out is for lead actor. We also have lead actors for Call Me By Your Name, Phantom Thread, Darkest Hour, and Roman J. Israel, Esquire. So we're limited to only five lead actor or actresses, but do you feel anyone was left out in Best Actor category or needed a swap? I mean, it's hard when there's 10 best film categories, but yet they
cut
it in
half. You're
going to
say Hugh Jackman,
right? Is The Greatest Showman, but I've made it clear already, The Greatest Showman, it's like my favorite film of all time mm-hmm. right now. So.
Right. I think it's a credible list. I wouldn't dispute any of the choices. If you're limited to five only out of a whole year's worth of releases, of course, somebody's going to feel that their favorite has been left out. But I don't know. Do you feel that this is Gary Oldman's to lose? I mean, I think that he's the front runner in this.
Well, all the top five categories have had sweeps. You know, they've been winning all across all award shows. But when we come to Best Actor, there is one nominee who was snubbed, and it's because of the hashtag Me Too movement, James Franco for The Disaster Artist.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Denzel Washington snuck in there with his, you know, there was really no traction for his performance in Roman J. Israel, Esquire, which is fantastic. I love the movie. But it was really James Franco's spot in this category this year. But
right.
And James's win it was winning. Across some of the awards shows, but because of the accusations against him, which are actually quite light in comparison, if we do have a continuum of sexual harassment accusations, you know, I think it's Gary Oldman's this year.
Going on to lead actress, we have Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya, Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird, and Meryl Streep for The Post. And if I were in the Academy, I would have such a hard time making this decision because there's such a wide spectrum of characters in this category.
Such a great list. I would say, first of all, Meryl Streep doesn't have room on her mantle for another trophy, so maybe she would just bow out, I mean, because
right.
Where is she going to go with it? I would say the odds are for Frances McDormand, who is very well liked in Hollywood, whose performance in this movie struck a particular chord, I think, given all that's going on. I would like to see Sally Hawkins, you know, be seriously considered for it too. But they're all, you know, really good. I mean, it's a range as you look at the list here of types of movies. Types of roles. You have comedy, you have, you know, coming of age, youthful, you know, anxiety and angst and all this. You have a veteran like Meryl Streep playing a pioneering woman in media. Sally Hawkins as the woman who falls in love with the creature.
Right.
And, of course, Frances McDormand. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that Frances McDormand will probably take it, but what a great roster.
Frances McDormand will get the award, and she has swept award season. And it's really frustrating because I don't think she is the best performance in this category, which is Sally Hawkins, to play a mute in a film that is not a silent film and yet be able to emote and to express so much with her facial expressions and to use other sound effects at her disposal is so powerful. And if you have not seen The Shape of Water, you have to. And even like on television, as you know, or on the big screen, it's something that it has so much power and weight and emotional hook to it that I just think it's amazing. It was my favorite film of the year until I saw The Greatest Showman.
Definitely. So it's your favorite Oscar film of the year.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, and on that note of the wide spectrum, I also feel like directing category in nominations is a hard choice because here, you know, we have Greta Gerwig. She's the fifth female ever to be nominated as director, and only Catherine Bigelow won for The Hurt Locker so far. But we also have Jordan Peele for directing Get Out and Guillermo del Toro, which, you know, and he's been getting awards in the recent season. But all three would be significant changes in awarding.
Right. And this will be Guillermo's year. I mean, it's like we don't know for sure whether or not The Shape of Water will get Best Picture. It's likely to. But we know that Guillermo will win Best Director. And I think that he has – it's sort of also like a career achievement for him or a lifetime achievement award because all of his films – his direction has been worthy of awards. Whether you look at Pan's Labyrinth or Crimson Peak or any of his other work, even his like action films have been gorgeously and uniquely directed. He's sort of carved out his own type of genre, his own feeling. He's like a Tim Burton of a director. You know, you can tell when you're watching a Guillermo del Toro film.
Yes, I agree. But do you think it's likely that Hollywood will once again split the difference and give the Best Picture to someone who was not going to win for Best Director? It sounds kind of paradoxical, mm-hmm. but yeah. It happens.
It does. It's very rare that it happens. And it could this year, as long as it's not Dunkirk. I'm fine.
So what are your picks for Best Film then? What would you like to see? I mean, predict something.
I would like to see Shape of Water, but I think that Three Billboards will probably get it.
It could. I voted at the Critics' Choice Awards this year. I voted for The Shape of Water. I'm rooting for that one. If not, I'd love to see Get Out take it, but I think it's unlikely.
Well, yeah, with supporting actor and, you know, even supporting actress, Laurie Metcalf hasn't really been picking up awards with the other shows this season, but I feel like it's been getting by far the most traction among audiences.
Can I just say, as far as Lady Bird goes and Laurie Metcalf, I wish this is the one of, you know, aside from all the other categories you talked about, I think Laurie Metcalf most deserves the Oscar this year. She's so outstanding in Lady Bird. And for some reason, Allison Janney and I, Tanya, has been sweeping. She's beat Laurie in every awards show. And I think it's not fair because if you look at Allison Janney's performance, and Allison's phenomenal. And is she Oscar-worthy in everything she does? Absolutely. However, this role for I, Tanya, I feel like it's the costume that's doing the acting. It's the costume and the makeup. She's got a bird on her shoulder and the screenplay. She's got a trucker mouth. And I feel like anyone, you and I included, with those words coming out of our mouths in that costume would be an hysterical performance.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily Allison's performance that's doing it so much as the script and the costuming, whereas Laurie Metcalf in Lady Bird is a revelation.
Much greater range of emotions and situations, yes, I would agree.
Well, on the note of supporting actors and actresses, I noticed Christopher Plummer got sneaked in there for all the money in the world, and he replaced Kevin Spacey after all these sexual assault allegations came out after him. And, you know, with the Time's Up and the Me Too movement dominating past award seasons, will absolutely carry on into the Oscars. We aren't quite past the Oscars so white. It's still a large majority, you know, if we can count on one hand, mm-hmm. the diverse nominees. So it's slowly changing, but it's not necessarily transformed. What do you think the Oscars are going to try and accomplish for their 90th this year and onward? What do we need to see? Or what are you hoping will come out of Oscars showing?
More diversification of filmmakers, of directors. I mean, I think it has to start there. It has to start with more minority and women taking on leadership roles in the major companies so that the decision making, the green lighting mm-hmm. begins with different perspectives in mind. I mean, in a certain sense, if there are, let's just say, two black movies made per year by Hollywood, those two movies are going to be overwhelmed by the vast number of other movies that are out there that could be nominated. So it has to begin with a greater number of movies representing a greater number of different kinds of people and different kinds of life experiences.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really powerful when we see someone with the star power of Nicole Kidman, who's working almost exclusively with female directors. And as a producer, she's developing female talent in Hollywood to try to help build the diversification behind the scenes, which is where it really does begin. You know, we're looking at like the cinematographer of Black Panther, who is female. And
also nominated for Mudbound here.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then also something, the Oscars, that they're doing something this year that they've never done before, which is helping to expand the diverse landscape, is they've invited Daniela Vega, who is the star of A Fantastic Woman, which is nominated in the foreign language category from Chile, and she is the first transgendered woman to be presenting at the Oscars in Oscar history. So that's a very good step forward also.
Well, Ryan Jay and Dave Lurson, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your predictions. And I guess we'll all see if we're right about anything come on the 4th.
Right about something, I know
yes.
that.
Thank you so much.
Film contributor Ryan Jay is a nationally syndicated radio host and the resident reviewer on Channel 4's The Morning Blend and Saturday News.
Dave Lurson is arts and entertainment editor for The Shepherd Express. They spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find their full conversation online and also take a poll on what movies and actors you think will win at this weekend's Oscars at WUWM.com.
The latest edition of Bubbler Talk comes your way when Lake Effect returns on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Lake Effect continues on WUWM now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North.
Bubbler Talk, quenching Milwaukee's thirst for knowledge.
So this week we're doing it a little differently. Youth who participate in programming at Running Rebels had a question they wanted to ask us, the media. So we put ourselves on the hot seat.
My name is Victor Barnett Jr. I am 14 years old.
My name is Terrence Robinson. I am 18 years old.
My name is Darius Simmons. I am 17 years old.
My name is Ashanti Travers. I am 16 years old.
My name is Benjamin Hart. I'm the news director at WISN 12, the ABC affiliate here.
I'm Annalise Hensel. I am the news director at the NPR affiliate, 89.7 WUWM.
My name is Jabril Farage. I'm a reporter at the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service.
So, guys, you're up. Who wants to tell me what your question is?
Our main question was, why isn't there positive image portrayals of black men in the news? Or why is it not so much compared to the negative?
What do you guys mean by positive?
There's events going on every day in Milwaukee. Positive events where people are coming together for a positive reason, trying to make change in our community, and we feel that's not being shown as much or at all, or little to at all.
We have what we call an editorial meeting every day, and we talk about what are the stories that matter to the people who are watching our news station. If you look at the percentages of just population, 42% of the population of our viewing area is in Milwaukee County. So what we do is we look at the things that are happening in Milwaukee County first. We look at the things that are happening in the neighborhoods of the people in Milwaukee County first, as we start to branch out into what it is that people are going to be interested in. So just for an example, if there were a fire in your neighborhood and a house exploded, you'd really want to know how that happened, because it happened in your neighborhood. You want to know specifically whether or not your house may be prone to a fire or an explosion. Two things are at play here. What's happening percentage-wise, you're just bringing it up, it's not just a color thing, it's a numbers thing. If something happens where there's a high population, that's going to get more scrutiny than something that happens in a smaller population. I think it's the Facebook phenomenon. When you look at your Facebook feed, you see all the things that you care about. Facebook has an algorithm that shows you that. You get what you are looking for. They give it to you because that's what makes it popular. You also kind of do that on your own when you choose what you watch. Yes, there is an astronomical number of crime stories in a news block any day. Astronomical. And I don't think that it necessarily every day has something to do with race. A lot of times, there are portrayals that are not as sensitively portrayed of young black men in news stories. It has to do with the number more so than it has to do with what the actual actions are of the people who are reporting those stories. I don't think there's a racist person on the staff of any of these places who are any more racist than society is. I think that they are certainly driven by what they're used to. They're driven by the communities they're a part of. It's a lot easier for them to find someone who's one of these white people if they're white people, because they have a quicker connection to those communities. They know somebody. They went to school with somebody. They know somebody whose brother knows that person. And there are these ways that they get closer and faster to those information points you guys are talking about. That's just a familiarity thing.
Now, Jabril, I'd like you to jump in here because you do a lot of coverage basically from the ground level. And I want to get your take on what you've just heard in the question that was asked.
The to-the-point answer is because it's easy. These things are on the surface. As Ben mentioned, you know, someone who has no kind of connection within these communities and what's actually happening can see a fire or can see, you know, a shooting or can see a reckless driving accident and jump in there and do a quick piece and then leave. And I think there are a few things at play here. One of them is the realities of newsrooms and what they're dealing with today. We have less reporters than we ever have doing more stories. I think another aspect here is lazy journalism. I say this from firsthand experience. I've seen reporters from news stations be at events, and then I'll look at a story that they posted the next day. I saw this one story after a listening session that kicked off the Department of Justice collaborative reform effort with the Milwaukee Police Department, and all of the references were "an attendee said." That is bad journalism, and I see things like this every day from every outlet in this city. The other one that we have to talk about, and it kind of came up, but bias, whether that is unconscious or maybe a little more conscious than we would like to admit, that is definitely something at play. And I think representation in newsrooms comes into play, and we have to talk about who is in the newsrooms versus who's being covered. But you don't have to look the same way as the people you're covering to do good work.
So I have a question for all three of you. Well, I'm going to start with Annalise. What is the mission statement or the goal of WUWM when it comes to reporting news?
What we aim to do is to report on the community, not just the bad things that are happening, but a broader perspective of the community, to try to connect our listeners better with the people who they live with, and to try to represent every population in a fair manner. Now, one of the things that we're doing to try to enhance our coverage is to hire beat reporters who focus on certain areas that are really big and are important and are areas that are difficult to get at accurately with just the occasional report here or there based on whatever the developments are. Our most recently created beat is race and ethnicity. What we hope to do with that beat is to have somebody who can look at some of the issues that you're talking about and get to know the communities of color in a very broad, holistic way, to understand what kind of conversations are going on that have nothing to do with crime, that maybe have to do with economic development or maybe have to do with culture, to look at the talent in the community, to look at the arts scene in the community. It's something that we feel that we have shortchanged our listeners in doing, because so much of the news business is responding to whatever the big thing is that's happening.
My last question is for Ben. So you spoke of immediate impact. That's basically our problem. We feel like the news stations showing all this negativity gives immediate impact. I remember speaking to a fifth grader and asking them what they want to do in life. They told me going to High Speed Chase. I asked him why. He said because he see it a lot, so I think it's cool. How can your news station, other news stations or radio stations use the concept of media impact to change the narrative and give hope to some young African-American people?
Black History Month. I think you can look across the board and it is a staple. Everyone has Black History Month stories that they go do. They go specifically out and find people and talk to people and try to get in the community and show that we are connected to this particular community across the board. Mostly because, to be really honest, it's Black History Month and people expect it. I'll tell you that much. That's a real answer. I wonder how many of these stories you guys saw that we did in January. It had nothing to do with Black History Month. You can go after us and talk about how many things we put on for clicks. Some of the things we put on for clicks are cougars that are loose in the city or somewhere near the city of Milwaukee. You know why it's on TV? Because it's unique and it's not normal. That's news.
It goes to what I said earlier, that we need to recognize that there's something wrong and then go out of our way to tell something different. But what I would like to do also is challenge you guys to do like what you're doing in terms of reaching out to tell us what you're seeing and what's wrong, because you have a unique perspective. You're young. That's a different perspective than I have. You're African-American. That's a different perspective than I have. You're male. That's a different perspective than I have.
Them telling us, though, only works if we listen. And as reporters and news organizations, that should be what we're here for.
Support for this season's Bubbler Talk comes from Educators Credit Union, a member-owned credit union dedicated to helping those who live and work in Wisconsin make informed financial decisions. More at ecu.com. What's got you scratching your head about the Milwaukee area? Submit your question at wuwm.com/bubblertalk.
And Bubbler Talk finishes Friday's edition of the show. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Mitch and I produce the show along with Joy Powers, Audrey Nowakowski, and Mayon Silver. Claudia Delgadillo is our production intern.
We get additional reporting from Rachel Morello and Susan Bentz, and studio engineering from Jason Reavy. Michelle Matternowski is WUWM's managing editor, and Willie Porter wrote our theme music.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and Sunday at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend. It's right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM. Milwaukee's NPR.
Keep listening. It's 11 o'clock, and fresh air comes your way next.